Okay, so first I said we weren't gonna do Ahava, but I realized that really Ahava is the perfect introduction to take us into our next topic. So we're kind of, this is gonna be like nesting, even more than the way Bracha was like nested inside of Tzedakah and Chesed and Tayv and Ahava. This is also gonna be like a little bit of a nest of a few things. So even though you have Svarim, I copied the first pages of three essays because I want to start by comparing them. Just because that alone gives us insight. So, not this, and not this, and not this. But chapter 9, which is Love of God. Two of them are called Ahava for some reason. This is Ahava, like Ahavas Hashem. And Sina. Oh no, did I not? Okay, well the third one you'll have to look up yourself, because apparently I did not bring you. There's also supposed to be... Okay, and then there's the Ahava of chapter 16, which is... That's Ahavas Hashem, and the Ahava of chapter 9, because the Ahava... Some of them you could do also from in your book. It's really in this.
We don't have these in our book.
You do. They're in there. I just wanted you to be able to compare three different ones, so I thought it would be easier to have them next to each other. But really, they're all in the book. You don't need to... Okay. So, the first one I'm going to read is the first paragraph. It's paragraph 119 of chapter 16, which is called Love. And you can see that the pasuk it's based on is... this is love of other people. Okay, it's page 52 once the numbers start.
Yeah. No, I got it from the paragraph. It's so easy because of the
paragraph. Really is easy with the paragraphs. Yeah. Okay. So for now, I'm not going to break it down into little tiny pieces. What I want you to do is just hear these three paragraphs next to each other to see that there's a general approach. This is Ve'ahavta le'reacha kamocha. Love all that I have placed by your side. Feel that its existence is necessary for your existence, its welfare for your welfare. Feel even that your existence, your welfare, your vocation is completed only by its existence. Let your soul be linked with its being, I am the Lord, who loves all and calls upon you, man, to be the instrument of this love. So just starting with that sentence, I would say, well, even before I could start breaking it down, like where did it get placed by your side? That has to do with the Rea. Okay, but there's all these pieces I could break down. But before I do, my first question is, the definition then that Rav Hirsch is giving of what it means to fulfill the Ahavta le'reacha kamocha, to love other people, is to feel... that the other person's existence is necessary for my own. The other person's success is necessary for my success. That's essentially what he said over here, without having yet broken it down and seeing the details. How do you do that? So that's what we're going to start to explore. And to start to explore it, I want to compare the beginnings of these other two relevant essays.
What's the line? You said the other person's...
success is necessary for my success.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so chapter 9, let's say. Let's do chapter 15 first. It actually comes right before the Ahavta le'reacha kamocha is Sina, hatred, which is such an interesting topic, right? We've got a couple negative topics that are nested here. We're also going to do falsehood, flattery, and... insincerity, or whatever, how it's called. Okay, it's like funny, the negatives. Okay, there's a negative, hatred. And he puts them next to each other. Actually, first sino, then ahava, which is interesting, and I think you'll see why on your own. Okay, so what's the first paragraph of sino? Hatred, which is possibly the opposite of ahava, hatred is the feeling that the existence of any being is a hindrance to our own existence, and that the destruction of that being would make our own existence more complete. In other words, it means that we do not feel ourselves whole so long as this or that is still existing. This feeling is the death, nay, the complete inversion of the human heart, which God has created for the comprehensive embrace of all beings, but which instead excludes one or all beings to the extent of desiring their non-existence and embraces only itself, in fact, becomes a stone. As soon, therefore, as you perceive hatred springing up in your heart against any being, know for certain that you have failed to attain your proper moral level. That doesn't mean you've failed permanently, but you're not there and you've got work to do. Okay.
So sad. This is so much more relatable.
Yeah. Right? But that's why I want to bring it. And I think that's why he brought it before Ava. Because step one is recognizing it in the negative. It really is. Now, you're going to see when we come back around to Ava again, is that it's not enough just not to hate. You have to not hate, because Torah says, L'sis ne'esachicha be'olvavecha. But that doesn't get you all the way to Ava. It's not like if you don't have one, so the other one's automatic. Okay, so we'll see. But do you hear how it was very much the opposite? Like, one was, if the other is necessary for my success, the welfare of someone else is part of my welfare. I'm incomplete if they're not complete. And the sinna is that I'm incomplete as long as they're around. Like, their very existence is somehow impeding my ability to function properly and be what I could become. Okay? Now, the first paragraph of chapter 9, which is paragraph 49, this is the mitzvah of Ve'ohavta Eis Hashem Elokecha V'chol Avavcha V'chol Nafshecha V'chol Me'odecha. It's pretty familiar. Those are the two big Ve'ohavtas, right? Ve'ohavta L'Re'acha Kamocha and Ve'ohavta Eis Hashem Elokecha. And those are related to each other very strongly. To love means to feel one's own being only through and in the being of another. Whew. To love God, therefore, means to feel that one's own existence and activity are rendered possible and obtain value and significance only through God and in God. Okay. You can hear without fully understanding these, because these take a lot of work. And they're also the introductory paragraphs. Then the next paragraphs are going to explain. But even there, you can hear that there's a similar theme in all of these. Right? This is something about... I was thinking of it like this. I can't point to you exactly, but this is how it sounded to me. With Taiva and Ava, it was about how you see yourself. Right? Do I see myself as the center of a universe in which everything is being drawn and sucked into myself? Or do I see myself as a center of universe in which I seek to push out as much bracha to the people around me, to the biggest amount of world around me as possible? And Sina and Ahava, okay, Taiva and Ahava, they're both Ahava, and Sina versus Ahava then, the Sina and the Taiva then must kind of correspond in a way. Right? It's just a little bit more about how you're then viewing other people. It's the same mindset, but one is a vocabulary of how you see yourself, and the other is the vocabulary of how you see other people in the same mindset, meaning from whether it's Taiva or Ahava, that's how you see yourself. The way that will look when you're looking at other people is Sina and Ahava. That's interesting that the Ava is the same. It's Taiva Ava, Sina Ava. Why isn't it different? Because in the state that's opposite of Taiva, you're not, it's the opposite of egotistical. So you're always looking at everyone else, right? You're seeing how much you can give to others. So already, the way you're seeing yourself is really seeing others, right? The person who's only seeking to take for themselves, so that's Taiva, that's like its own thing. And they're only seeing themselves. That's what ego. Ego means I only see myself. Like I can't see everybody else because I'm in my own way, right? I'm so big that I can't see beyond myself to anybody else. All I can think about is myself, and everyone else is really almost like they're not existing. Okay. So I want to give an example from my personal life. Standing at waiting for Tkiyas HaShofar. Right? This is all the long Natsayachs, and people finish them at their own pace, and there's sort of it's kind of standing in your poise, and you're ready, and maybe the Baal Tokeya is, tapping on the shofar and making sure it's all clear and ready to go. And It's like sort of shuffling noises from the men's side, right? They're getting organized. I'm waiting. And I, this is a true story, I find myself thinking, you know, that's how she comes to shul on Rosh Hashanah? Like, that's really? That's how you dress? And, you know, like, maybe you don't bring your baby to the Kiyas HaShofar if they can't keep quiet. Right? Like, and everyone has to hear the Kiyas. You have to make an arrangement. I don't know. And, I don't know, this person, they sing too loud. And it's not so nice, or it's distracting, or whatever. I'm thinking these thoughts. I'm waiting for the shofar to blow. And all of a sudden, I thought, oh my gosh, I think I'm the judge. It's Rosh Hashanah, we're all being judged. And I think it's me. It's my job. I'm supposed to judge everybody. So I could appreciate a joke at my own expense, but that's a sad one. And I thought, oh, that's a problem. Right? I don't think I want to be standing here judging everybody. That would be very bad news for me and everyone else if I'm the judge. Hashem's the judge. That's why I'm here, right? For Rosh Hashanah. And if Hashem's the judge, so what's he going to see? So I had been learning about this idea that we learned about with bracha, right? That of tov ayin. That what you see in others, right? And wanting the good for other people. And seeing the good in other people. And tov ayin hu yivorach, right? That you become a tzinor for the bracha. And I'm like, this is, I have to turn this around. And I thought, well, that person that I was so critical of, but that person is an amazing balas tshuva, who totally, like, did efforts that I could never even relate to in terms of their whole relationship with their family and everything, right, in order to turn their life around and do things just because that's the way Hashem says to do it. And this other person is so insightful and such an amazing akeres habayis. And so, like, right, and this other person, I don't know, some other thing, like, whatever it was. And I realized, you know, if I'm standing here and I'm going to be judged, I mean, I am going to be judged. If I'm just judged for myself, there's a lot of big holes in my character. And there's some good things, I hope, but there's a lot of bad things. And I'm really going to be in trouble. But if you would take me together with this group, so each of us has different amazing qualities. Like, yeah, I could look at all the bad things, but, like, what if you would take us all as one group? Maybe you'd get, like, one really whole, amazing person. Sort of in aggregate, right? Not one person, but, like, this person with their stick-to-itiveness, and this person with their reliability, and this person with their dedication, and this person with their patience, and this one with their love, and this, right? Like, all those things would be together. And I thought to myself, I really want these people to be here. Like, I'm not thinking, like, oh, is their skirt too short, or their baby too loud, or their, I don't know, whatever else they're doing, right? All of a sudden, I'm thinking, I really need these people, because I'm standing here, sort of like, besoch ami, you know, like, I want to be judged in part of a group, not really just where I have achieved on my own. That's kind of the concept of tefillah b'tzipor, is we're all kind of get combined together, and that's a huge, so for me, that was like a personal experience. That was an experience of this, it was like a flavor of what it means to take these ideas of bracha and tov ayin and ahava and put them into practice in a way that you start to see other people as necessary for your own self. Yeah, sort of an awareness of my own lacking and failings because I was being critical. That made me aware. It caused me to notice that this is a problem. In me, this is a problem. And therefore, I need other people very badly. Because maybe they have abilities and strengths and quality and character and mitzvos and achievements and midos that I am not succeeding in. So if we could be judged together as a group and as a community, it's a much healthier thing for me and for everyone and for the community, for all of us to be joined together and have each other as part of our team and our identity. Okay. Now, we're going to set this aside and we're going to come back to it. Because this little piece and this question, how do I see other people as necessary to my life? Because that seems to be the key element which we haven't yet explored too much, but it seems a hard one. How do you see somebody that's maybe like in a different grade and you don't know them very well? It's like your life depends on them and their success and their welfare. Because like if that girl was absent for 6 months, would you know? Possibly not. And that's not necessarily anything to be ashamed of. There's people in Clydesdale that I've never met. Like, how would I know that they weren't well? Like, I mean, it might be shameful if they were like in my grade or something, but if, or my class, but if they're not, like, it doesn't always mean that I have to know, but how could I then feel that person's so necessary to me if I don't even know about them? So that's kind of where I wanted to now take a little nest and go within a subtopic and then come back and let that inform our understanding of what Ahava means, and given that we know it's so important. And so to do that, we're going to look at speech. And to look at speech, okay. So first is this one. This is, it's page 256, 257, and it's paragraph 380. And there are some of them handed out. Oh, maybe I didn't put them over. Here. Part of oppression and vexation. Like, oh, nah. Okay, so hurting other people. Okay. No, before I do that, what I did not re-Xerox is from chapter 88, which we just did, which was the Tzedakah and Gemilus Chasadim. So in Tzedakah and Gemilus Chasadim, I wrote down here paragraph 575. In Tzedakah and Gemilus Chasadim, I'm just going to like remind us that we said that higher, incomparably higher than Tzedakah, financial and material charity, stands Gemilus Chasadim, good works. Remember this? In Tzedakah, you give away your worldly goods, your wealth. In Gemilus Chasadim, you place on God's sacred altar all the best and noblest you have, your judgment, your word, your strength, your deeds, your entire personality, for the good of your brethren. In Tzedakah, you offer only the means from which good may result. In Gemilus Chasadim, you grow the flowers of bliss themselves, become the creator of the health, the joy, the peace, the happiness, the welfare of your neighbor. If you want to see a man as the true image of his Father in heaven, you must behold him as he, filled with pity, with love, with the divine spirit, makes bread for the hungry, takes care as a father of the infant's well-being and education, and on, right? That was the ultimate Salam Elohim. If you want to see a person in the dumus of his creator, then go find a person who does pure chesed. Real, true, selfless creating of other people, saving their lives, chesed. And saving their lives could be in a small way, bringing a smile to the face of the despondent, right? This also would be in that category. Okay, so now, again, this is going to be a little bit of the contrast. So the contrast would be restriction, oppression, and vexation, harming other people. Okay, so I'm on the right side, so it's page 257, and it's the beginning, the paragraph that starts in there, God has made sensitive man's soul. So it's within paragraph 380, but paragraph 380 really has a few sub-paragraphs. God has made sensitive man's soul, capable of being pained by every harsh touch. And yet he created this tender, sensitive instrument. Meaning, why did Hashem then make people's soul and feelings sensitive that way? Why should we care what people think or say to us? Sticks and stones can break my bones. Like, why should we care? So don't care. Why did God create? But we do care. We really do care. So why? Why does Shem make people so sensitive? Could be. We didn't have to be that way. And yet he created this tender, sensitive instrument. Instrument means like a tool, right? Instrument. So that it may be the holder of the most sacred blessings of the human being. Meaning, Hashem created us sensitive because that very sensitivity is what allows us to contain within ourselves these most sacred, meaning holy, brachos, which are of honor and serenity, respect and love, of every enjoyment that life can provide, of every worthwhile feeling of happiness, and of every emotion which links man to life and to his fellow men. As long as it exists clear and serene within the human being, so long will he remain happy, however hard he may be hit by external events. But once it is wounded and saddened, and its peace disturbed, then the human being becomes sick and withers like a crushed flower. He says something similar about this in his essays on education. He says, wouldn't a mother pride herself when she looks at a child who's been deathly ill and knows that because she sat by his side for weeks, thanks to him, he's back to health. If not for him, he wouldn't have made it. He says, and what about the child who's spiritually shriveling and not succeeding? What we would call now the off-the-derech child. He said, if you would withhold from that child smile and chizuk, you are withholding from him the very medicine he needs to get better. Imagine. Right? It is the sensitivity and the kindness that is it's like the food for the soul. Not for the neshama per se, but for the nefesh, like for the spiritual emotional side of the person. So if we would be blunt and coarse and not care, we also would not be able to have the sensitivity and refinement that apparently are related to that, which are the honor, the serenity, the respect, the love, the ability to enjoy the things in life that are truly worthwhile and meaningful. All of that is actually a result of having that, being tuned into our emotional reality. So we don't want to tune it out, we want to tune it in. The problem is that when it's tuned in and then somebody hits out at it, the person shrivels and withers. We really are very sensitive. You should hold sacred man's inner sanctuary. Okay, so we haven't been learning reverse for so long, but if you hold reverse, you learn reverse long enough, little bells start ringing in your head. Inner sanctuary? There's gonna be a four-level model here. Right away, you know, right? Just like we have the four olamos, the atzilus, and the bria, and the yetzira, and the asiya. So the Beis HaMikdash, we have the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and the Kodesh, and the which is the Heichal. We have the inner courtyard, and we have the outer courtyard. That's the four, and they correspond. It corresponds to many, 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 many other things. Neshama, Seichel, Nefesh, and Guf. Okay, it corresponds to everything. But wait a minute. Man has an inner sanctuary. Okay? You should hold sacred man's inner sanctuary means other person's emotional life is their Kodesh HaKodeshim. And he doesn't just throw it around. It means it's part of a greater model of a human being. Consider it as God-given soil in which to plant your most beautiful blessings. Imagine if you saw other people as a place that you could plant your most beautiful blessings. You have something to give to the world. A mission, something to deliver, something beautiful to share into the world. And this person becomes the vessel to receive it. If nobody would be there to receive it, how would you give it? If there's nowhere to put it down, right? It's like you're holding, you ever seen those vases that are pointed at the bottom? If there's nobody to receive it, where do you put it down? It doesn't matter how nice it is, right? There's nothing you can do with it. Okay. Your most beautiful blessings, wisdom and solace, love and kindness. And for this purpose, what was this purpose? The purpose was planting your most beautiful blessings. For that purpose, you were given that most noble gift, the word. So the power of the word is, it could kill the other person from the inside, or it could be your most noble gift that you have been given and which you can be spreading and distributing and sprinkling like largesse around the world. Okay? You could be doing that. That's what you were given it for. That's what your words are for. Okay. And where they touch, where do the words touch other people? Not in their chatzer, not in their heichal, but in their Kodesh HaKodeshim. There's something about the words that reaches all the way to the deepest, most vulnerable, but also most powerful spot. The source where all the life flows out. That's connected to the words. When you speak words, that's what you touch. When people say sticks and stones can break my bones, but names will never hurt me, if they only consider themselves a body. But that's not where words touch. That's what's false about that statement. Sticks and stones can break my bones, and names will always hurt me, because who I am is not my body. So sticks and stones can break my bones, but they can't. The sticks and stones are the ones that can't hurt me. It's even really what he said, right? As long as it exists clear and serene within the human being, so long will he remain happy, however hard he may be hit by external events. No matter how difficult life is, no matter how many sticks and stones there are, the truth is they can't hurt you on the inside. They can't hurt you and who you are and how you see yourself and your sense of general happiness and satisfaction and meaning in life. It's only the words that could touch you over there. Okay, so this now starts to be... So I did notice once that bell started ringing on the inner sanctuary, it reminded me of a few other things. One thing it reminded was that the lower level was tzedakah. Tzedakah is giving worldly goods your wealth. Okay, that would correspond then to the Mizbeach Chitzoni. He said you lay it on the altar. That's the Mizbeach Chitzoni. That's where you bring worldly offerings, like a cow, right? These kinds of things on the Mizbeach Chitzoni. The higher level was Gemilos Chasadim, where you place the best and noblest you have of yourself, right? Your personality, your judgment. That's the Mizbeach HaKetores. That's inside. Refresh consistently. It would be so much fun to learn this. Sometime look for it. Now we're in Shmos, by the way. You're going to get to all the things about the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan. Ketores, Rav Hirsch always says, the avoda of Ketores is the avoda of offering to Hashem our whole personality and self. Okay? The avoda of the Mizbeach on the outside, the animal karbanos, that's the avoda of offering Him our physical. Our physical energy, the money, the things, the physical gifts that He gives us, we offer Him in service. And the Mizbeach HaKetores is the self that we're offering, the personality that we're offering, so that He was consistent over here also, right? But what's the avoda of the inside, the Kodesh HaKadoshim? That turns out to be words. It's an interesting clue that, like, sort of shows up in a different location. And in fact, that reminded me that there's a chazal. I brought it for you over here. I'm pretty sure I saw it cited in a Gemara. I didn't spend tons of time looking for it. We had one of my kids had her tonsils out this morning, so we were a little bit busy with that. But should I put a copy? I'm just gonna see if I need a copy of this for myself. But if you look at this Medrash Tehillim, which also quotes this, and I saw it also in a Tosfos Yomtov, the bold Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Abba. Mahu el dvir kodshecha. What does it mean, el dvir kodshecha? To the dvir of your kodesh. Oh, do you need another one? Here, I have one more.
Okay.
Yeah, the bold. The dvir means the Beis HaMikdash, right? El dvir kodshecha means the Beis HaMikdash. You see it on Hanukkah. Finu eshechalecha, right? Teru eshmikdashecha. Like, you have over here the dvir, yeah. So it turns out that dvir doesn't mean Beis HaMikdash in a general way. Dvir means the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's called, the Beis Mikdash is called Dvir because it's Mimakom Shehadibros Yotzos La'olam. That's where, well, it's where the Aseres HaDibros are. Dvir is Lashon Davar, Dibur. But it's also where the words, Hashem creates creation with words, right? Vayomer Elohim. The Dibros, the creation of the world, the energy comes through from the Dvir. Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah Udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. So that's all coming from the Dvir. Dvir actually means the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's another connection of words, Dibor, somehow have a direct association with the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in particular of the various parts of the Avodah. And okay. Now, in a person, what is speech associated with? Also, the highest, most human part of the person, right? That's the neshama, the tzelem Elokim, So, for example, if you look at source Gimel, the pasuk is v'chol siach hasode. Siach, by the way, is related to lasuach, to have a conversation or to daven. It's a Yitzchok lasuach basode. Over here, siach means the growth in the field, but it's also being associated. If you look at Rav Hirsch's commentary in Bereishis, he's associating this with the speech and with prayer. Chol siach hasode terem yihi ava'aretz. All of the vegetative growth had not yet sprouted onto the surface of the land. V'chol esef hasode terem yitzmach. All of the grass of the fields had not yet sprouted. Ki lo himtir Hashem Elokim al ha'aretz. Because Hashem had not yet brought rain onto the earth. V'adam ayin lavod es ha'adama. And there was no human yet to work the land. All this ties into avoda, and what's the avoda of a human. So Rashi says, ki lo himtir, o my time lo himtir. What's the reason Hashem did not cause rain? Lefisha adamayin lavod es adama. He says that the pasuk is saying Hashem did not cause rain because there was no human yet. Why would he not cause rain? Because there were no people. Why do you need people to have rain? Ve'ein makir. If there's no people yet, there's no one to recognize betovasam shal v'shamim, to recognize how good, how deeply good rain really is. Ukshaba adam ve'yado shehem tzarach la'odam. And when a person is there and he experiences what it's like when there isn't rain, and then it rains, and now he has knowledge, das is not just knowing something like as a fact that you studied. Das is something you've experienced it. You know it from having lived it. Okay, so he will know that they are necessary for the world. He's palel aleihem. He'll daven for it. V'yardu v'tzamchu ha'ilan sadshayim, and then the rains will come down and everything will grow. Now, hold that one in your head a second, and look at the next Rashi that I brought. It's not the next Rashi. L'nefesh chaya. V'yihi ha'adam l'nefesh chaya. Hashem, the pasuk says, and Rav Hirsch tells us we have to focus on how did he become a nefesh chaya, an individual living creature. Because there's other living creatures that are called nefesh chaya in the Torah, animals. Okay, there's other things that are alive. But the Torah, Rav Hirsch says, the Torah is telling us, how did Adam become a living creature? Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. That's how he became a living creature. And because of that, and we can't go into that topic, it makes a person entirely different from an animal because of how we became a nefesh chaya. What does this mean? He became a nefesh chaya. Af behema v'chaya nikru nefesh chaya. Also animals and chayos are called nefesh chaya. Ach zo shel Adam chaya shebikulan. But Adam has a kind of life that is more alive than any animal. In what way? And we're not going to, this isn't our topic, but here's the part that is. Shenit tosef bo, what's different about Adam is that he had added to him dea v'dibor. Dea, knowing things through living and experiencing them, and dibor, speech. Do you notice in the previous Rashi? Kshaba adam v'yada shehim l'tzarech la'olam hispalel aleihem. It's dea and dibor. It's dea and dibor. This is a unique way of thinking about the specially human tzelem elokim dmus yotzro of a person. Is dea dibor. So you could see why it might be associated with the Kodesh HaKodesh. Okay. Even if we don't know exactly why. All right. So now, this one. Falsehood, lying, flattery, and hypocrisy. You've always wanted to learn about this. Okay, it's chapter 50 in Chorev. Dibor Sheker, Hanifa, or Hanufa, Gnevas Das. I'm going to start with number 369. I put this one, I managed to put the tags on before I Xeroxed it. So you can see. Paragraph 369. Oh boy. Okay, we're definitely... I didn't think we were going to complete this in one session, but now we have to find a good stopping place. God, who created man to be just, that is to say, to leave and give to all entities in all their relations that which is their due. Okay, that was a loaded half a sentence, or maybe one-fifth of a sentence, because they're long sentences. Hashem created man to be just. What's just? Tzedek. You remember that tzedakah was turned out to be really important. And tzedakah is from the word tzedek. It means what is just, what is coming to a person. It's not that you are doing something. It's just realizing what is right. What is right? What ought to be? So Hashem created man to be just, meaning to give everything what's owed to it. It's space, it's money, it's respect. Has also endowed his mind. So, if Hashem created us to be just, he must have given us the tools to do that. He has endowed man with a mind that has the faculty, that means the ability, the function, of mirroring the reality of things in their various relations. It's a very interesting way he puts it. He says, let's take a step back. What is our receiving interface to the world? How do we know anything about the world? Through our senses. Okay, we have sight, we have hearing, taste, smell, touch. And in these ways, we get information about the world. Now, you probably have learned that it's not really enough to have those physical senses working. Okay? So there are people who have perfectly healthy eyeballs and maybe even perfectly healthy optic nerves, but have a form of brain damage where they cannot recognize what they see. So they are blind. They actually can't see, even though their eyeballs are working fine and transmitting light and sending it along. But it comes to the end of the optic nerve and it's like a dead end. The message doesn't really have anywhere to go. And so the person cannot see. This is called in Chumash, sanver, which nowadays means to filter. Yeah? So in the time of Lot, right, all those people were pounding on the door and they were afflicted with sanverim.
Oh,
there was nothing wrong with their eyeballs, but they couldn't see anything. They couldn't see anything that they were seeing.
We learned that last year, Mrs. Klein, she was saying it's not being blind because it's not that person's blind. She couldn't explain it to us because it was confusing.
Yeah, it's neurological blindness. It's cortical blindness. They call it cortical blindness. Okay, so this is a thing, and I could share all kinds of very interesting and fascinating case histories with you that I've read over the years about people like this who have all, they have real, you know, they can't, their brain can't put together into a flow. So they see like separate pictures, but it doesn't go into one smooth image. It's quite a handicap. There was one lady where they handed her an envelope and they gave her like a slot, and even though she couldn't see, and she really couldn't see, so they said, just guess, just try and put it through the slot, just guess randomly. She could always get it through the slot. Because some parts of her brain were getting information from her eyes, but not the part that tells your conscious awareness what it's seeing. Right? We have no idea what goes on inside these little heads. Like, it's unbelievable what our brains do. If they did these experiments, this is like a long time ago, they did experiments where they gave people these crazy glasses. We'll stop on this topic, so won't work because we only have 2 minutes. They gave people crazy glasses, right? And the crazy glasses caused them to see everything upside down. It was like a mirror image, like it's a lens that flips everything. After a few days, people don't see anything upside down anymore. Everything seems correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever learned that the way your eyes work, the image like gets reversed, and then your brain?
Really?
Yeah. Because what happens is, from the moment you're born, you're seeing light and you're seeing contrast. We're going to talk more about vision and how we learn from it. But you're seeing all these things and your brain is making sense of it. Saying, well, if this and that, okay, that means those two are different, or this is closer and that's farther, or this shape, this, it represents, okay? You have a blind spot that you never see. Both eyes have pretty significant blind spots. Your brain just fills in. It takes data from one eye, fills in, gives you a composite image. You don't even see two images. You got two eyes.
When you close
very
your
few
eye.
People see two. Yeah, you can. You can like do this crazy thing. There's things you could do with wallpaper. You can fill in a hole. Do you ever see? There's optical illusions. You hold it at the right distance, cover one eye, and it looks like it's a whole complete pattern. Even though when you look with two eyes, there's a hole in the middle of the pattern. But if you line it up with your blind spot, your brain very sensibly will say, look, if there's a pattern over the whole page, probably it's over the whole page. And just because I can't see anything there doesn't mean there's no pattern there. It just means there's a blind spot there. And it fills it in. And you see it. Because seeing, this is, this is something that's there. Seeing is not just eyes. Seeing is what you understand yourself to be seeing. Okay, so we'll stop there. The school's over. And Mirza Shem will continue. But this is why he's saying it this way. Hashem has endowed his mind, meaning the person's mind, with the faculty of mirroring the reality of things in their various relations. We didn't even finish the sentence, okay? But this is where he's going. It sounds at first like a very complicated way of saying things, but it's because he's talking about Dea. It's about the mind over here. It's not about your eyes that's the issue. We're going to be talking about our minds over here, because that's the key thing when we're talking about truth versus falsehood. Right? That's going to be a function of the mind. So we start getting into Dea and Dibor. Okay.
Yes. Summarize just like
yeah. We ended in like a weird spot. So what we did talk about was an introduction where we saw that there's a concept of ahava, which by looking at ahava and looking at sinna, we understand means that somehow we have to see other people as necessary to our lives. Right? Furthermore, we saw that words and speech are a very powerful, uniquely human gift that also affects other people in their deepest, most uniquely human place. Right? That was the devir in the Beis HaMikdash as corresponding, as relating to speech. Okay? And then we didn't really get to it, but we sort of just opened up saying, so what is this about Dea and Dibor? This idea that there's Dea, there's Das, there's how we understand things, and there's Dibor, how we communicate about them, and that touches people in some very deep and powerful way. But we don't know what that way is. We just know that it is very deep and powerful. And then later, after we talk about the sheker part of this, like why it is such a problem to say things that are untrue, because we don't really understand, like, well, okay, because Torah says don't lie. Like Torah says also, like, you should keep Shabbos. I don't know. But he's going to talk about why that has such a big effect. Then we'll take that back. And then when we learn about ahava and how much we need to relate to other people, we will have a beginning way of understanding why it is that every other person is really so important to us and our success. It's a way of learning to love other people and value them, whether you know them or not. Sometimes even in spite of the fact that you know them. Okay? So we are sort of like hanging in the middle, but it's worth it. This one's really, really worth it. Okay? They're all worth it. This is worth it. It's truth. It's worth it. That's it.
So interesting how you tie them all together and put them all in touch.
There's no end. Like they all, everything ties to everything, ties to everything, but
it's very interesting. At this, these different reasons of why, not just like the way I have it, all these things.
It applies to everything.
You put it together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so first does put it together. So he does do it, and the more you learn, you start. That's like going, oh dear, right? Like you start to see that it's a pattern. I was in New York. And somebody introduced me to a granddaughter of Rav Schwab. So, the Schwabs are like the spiritual heirs, and physical heirs, but spiritual heirs of Rav Hirsch in Frankfurt. So she said, do you use my grandfather's Sefer? And I told her I do. It's Fila, Rav Schwab on prayer. And we were talking about Rav Hirsch, and she said, it's a system. It's a system of thought. Because if something is true, it's true everywhere. So the more you learn, the more you start seeing those connections in everything else that you learn. And you say, oh, it's everywhere consistent. And so you can know, the more you learn, the more you understand the next thing you learn. And then the more you understand the next thing you learn.
That's very encouraging.
Yeah, each thing that you learn gives you more that you then take with you into the next essay. And then you know even more. And then more and more and more. But it's hard to know where to start. It's like, learning Torah in general. Like, Where do you start and where do you end? It's round, right? There's no beginning, there's no end. Like, you just keep going. Okay.
Can I take a paper cut?
Yes. Enjoy.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.